This audio interview is a production of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality and is part of its toolkit for the Comprehensive Unit-Based Safety Program, or CUSP, for intensive care units. I'm Kate Schmidgall, and I'm joined by Ann Donovan, Assistant Clinical Professor of Anesthesia and Critical Care Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Today, we're discussing prevention of healthcare-associated infections in hospital intensive care units and how to increase ownership and engagement among frontline staff, physicians, and hospital leadership. Anne, welcome.
Thank you.
Assuming that an ICU has been trying to implement infection prevention efforts for a while, and they're just kind of getting stuck, what are some encouragements that we can offer for habit building and changing culture?
I think it's really important to make sure that what you're doing is really visible. So one of the things that I notice is that people have a lot on their minds. There's a lot of quality improvement initiatives. There's a lot of best practices. And you want to make sure that what's entailed in your protocol is not just sort of getting lost in the shuffle. So you can't expect to sort of present this new initiative once and then expect it to be sort of widely adopted. So you need to really be repetitive, make the efforts visible, and keep reminding people that this is a common goal that we're all shooting for.
How do you make things visible?
There's a lot of different ways to make things visible. I think in general, a lot of people respond well to data like infection rates, line days, catheter days, number of patients in a unit with lines at this time. And so first of all, you have to collect that data. Second of all, there are ways to display that data or even just to talk about it. So you could create bulletin boards displaying those data. You could email flyers or posters, or you could, integrate it into sort of the daily handoff or huddle process so that you're talking about it on a daily basis and that people are hearing it discussed over and over again. What might be interesting to staff during a daily huddle would be things like number of patients in the ICU right now with central lines or with Foley catheters, with a reminder that part of our quality improvement project is to try to remove those lines and encourage staff to think about, do patients still need those lines? And if they don't, maybe discuss with whoever is in charge of deciding whether or not that line still remains in place. Anytime you can incorporate real examples of how either something that you did actually went on to affect a patient and improve an outcome, or if something was missed or something wasn't done the way that it should have and perhaps contributed to harm. Anytime you can see a real impact of an intervention on a specific patient, I think that's a really powerful way to convey the message that, we're all in it together and these interventions really do make a difference for individual patients. I think in general, we all want to help patients. And
right.
So demonstrating the impact of our practices on real people, I think, can have a profound impact on building engagement and making people feel that they are part of potentially the problem and the solution. I think, again, trying to re-engage champions, it's also important to seek feedback from the people in the unit about maybe why it's not working anymore. Maybe it's too hard for their workflow. Maybe they don't have time to do it. Maybe there's a simple fix that could improve compliance. I would start there. I would also think about setting some kind of goal that is measurable and achievable and perhaps thinking about incentivizing achieving that goal. You could do anything from sort of a monthly lunch for the staff if you achieve your CLABSI, your desired CLABSI or CAUTI rate for the month, or I mean, in general, I think like food is a good motivator. So a lot of the ideas I have or the things I've seen done revolve around kind of
chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, you know, you want your incentive to be something that's actually going to motivate people. So if you're able to have financial incentives, some places have sort of a yearly unit-based financial incentive goal. So if you can try to incorporate your project into some kind of an incentive plan for people to give them a reason to want to do it beyond just doing what's right for the patient. Frontline staff often think of things or see things or experience things that you may not have anticipated when you were creating a protocol. So it's really important to go back to the people who are actually carrying it out and try to get their feedback about what's working and what's not, so that, and then actually act on anything actionable that they bring up so that they can see that you're listening to them. Another thing that I would mention is that kind of throughout this process, it's really important to work on breaking down any existing hierarchy to encourage conversation to happen kind of on an equal playing field. Try to create an environment where conversation and feedback are not only welcomed, but expected. I think this only works in an environment where teamwork and collaboration are valued.
Whose job is it to ask, is this catheter still needed?
It's everyone's job. Anyone who has direct contact with the patient can ask that question. So nurses are with a patient for hours a day. They should be thinking about whether the lines or catheters are needed every single shift. Physicians or advanced practice providers should be thinking about this at least daily, if not more often than that. Physical therapists and occupational therapists have an opportunity to think about lines and tubes that are sort of interfering with their ability to do their work and whether those lines and tubes are still necessary. And even, you know, even other providers that I didn't mention are also involved. And then finally, I would end with the fact that patients and families are also really important in that conversation too. I've had a lot of patients tell me that their Foley catheter is really uncomfortable and why can't it come out right now? And that should be a really powerful trigger to think about whether or not that catheter is still needed.
How do we know if the interventions are working?
I think one of the things that you see are changes in practice over time. But I think over time, when your interventions are really working, you see them being incorporated into people's daily habits, daily workflow, and really becoming an unconscious part of sort of their day-to-day patient care activities. You can, of course, and should also collect data about line days, line infection rates, and a number of other things. And so over time, you should also be able to see it sort of in the data. Obviously, you would hope to see a decrease in infection rates over time. If things start stalling out, I think you need to re-engage all groups who are involved. So leadership, hospital leadership may need to reinvest more resources to allow people to continue education or continue collecting data or figure out how to incentivize compliance. The physicians may need to sort of re-up their discussions about what we're trying to do and how to best do it. The frontline providers, you know, it might be something where you need to start talking about it again at your daily huddle, or you need to, you know, send out newsletters or talk about it in a staff meeting, or figure out a way to make it visible again and bring it to the forefront of kind of all of the other things that they're being asked to do.
Are there other examples that you can describe of engaging people in patient safety efforts?
In our ICU, we asked providers of any kind, anybody walking through the ICU, we asked them, how will the next patient in our ICU be harmed? And we asked people to keep an eye out for problems that they saw or things that they encountered on a day-to-day basis that could lead to patient harm. And when they saw those things, we asked them to write it down, put it in a box, and then that box was taken to our CUSP meetings, and we reviewed all of the different ideas that had been submitted by staff. And they were anything from, you know, just sort of very minor, you know, maybe we don't have enough of this particular IV tubing, you know, in supply, or to all the way up to things like in our code carts, we don't have 14-gauge angiocaths to use if a patient has a pneumothorax during a code. And we tried to brainstorm ways to act on any of the actionable suggestions. And in that way, we actually came up with a number of sort of what we called CUSP safety solutions, where new equipment or new workflows or new supplies or just new ways of doing things were created in our ICU based on suggestions from frontline providers. And when one of those solutions was created, we made it very visible. So we gave credit to the person who had submitted the idea in the form of a poster or a flyer, gave sort of shout outs to people who had brought up concerns in staff newsletters and things like that. That does a couple of different things. Again, it makes your efforts really visible, but it also reinforces and validates the behavior of bringing up safety concerns. And so it promotes a culture of safety for people to speak up when they see something that they think, you know, could be harmful. And there are many ways, I think, to make to give credit and to make these types of efforts visible. But just the process or the act of doing that, I think, can be really validating for staff.
Also, that's an opportunity to involve new people, right?
Yeah, it's a great idea. New people who are coming into your unit who maybe come from a place that have done things differently might notice things that you don't notice in kind of the day-to-day way that you've always done things. And so giving them a way to bring up any concerns that they have based on their sort of different perspective and different background can also be a really effective way to engage people who are new to your unit.
And leveraging like that moment in time to draw out that new insight, which they won't have again.
Right. It also helps, I think, sort of orient them to your safety culture as well. So that coming into a new environment, they know that, you know, they are encouraged to look for things that could be improved and to speak up when they see something.
So how do we increase connection between nurses, like frontline staff, and the leadership?
In general, it's important to engage peer groups or peer champions so that there can be interaction and sort of instruction and engagement on a peer-to-peer level and not coming from sort of a top-down level, meaning that people perceive that leadership is sort of imposing something on them. It's important that peers are involved so that people can understand why it's important and who's actually asking them to take on a new challenge or change their practice.
Right. And there's also like a solidarity there, right?
Yeah. I think that anytime you can talk with somebody that you work with closely every day and share with each other what you're doing or how you've changed kind of your workflow or your practice, that's going to be a lot more effective than having, you know, a clipboard or, you know, an administrator with a clipboard sort of watching you or telling you that you need to do something.
Speaking to like the hospital leadership, what kind of barriers do you think they might be encountering when trying to, you know, build ownership or engagement?
Some things I've seen that may work include sort of making rounds with the charge nurse, actually kind of talking at bedside with nurses or other care providers about the impact of their intervention on kind of their day-to-day workflow. I do think that it is sort of a whole team effort. So certainly it's as much the responsibility as of the hospital leadership team to provide the necessary support and resources and education as it is for the frontline providers to actually incorporate the changes into their workflow. In all of our efforts, we should be trying to sort of bring the patient back into the center of everything that we're doing.
How can you include patients who are able and their families into the process? Can they help prevent their own infections?
Patients and families can be integrated into ICU care and specifically infection control prevention measures in a number of different ways. They can round with ICU teams. They can be involved in sort of helping make goals for the day. And in that capacity, they can speak up if they're wondering why a Foley catheter is still in place or why they still need that big central line in their neck. They can help with physical therapy and occupational therapy, exercises. And again, that might be another time when they can speak up about some of these things. And so I think the more that we bring the patient and family sort of into the care team and make it clear that they're empowered to be an advocate for themselves, the more likely they will be to speak up when either they see something or they're wondering why we haven't done something that might help prevent an infection.
Any specific tactics on that note that you maybe have seen work before?
I think talking through daily goals with patients who are able to communicate and participate or family members and creating sort of a daily schedule with things like physical therapy is going to come at this time. We're going to work with occupational therapy at this time, et cetera. I think that's a way to sort of not only give patients and families a little bit of control, but also a little bit of certainty in what to expect out of their day. It's really hard for patients and families kind of to always be left hanging and just not know what's going to happen when. But anyway, that specific technique, I think, could establish a baseline of engaging patients and families in their care in the ICU, and in that way might help empower them to bring up other concerns that they have. Everyone's an important part of the team, and all of the interactions you have with them should promote the idea that their concerns and questions and ideas are invited and valued, that you welcome them to speak up. It's okay to have differences of opinion or disagreements between members of the care team, but it's important to engage in a conversation about why those differences exist and try to come to common ground if you can.
Anne, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you for your time. This has been a production of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Special thanks to Anne Donovan for joining us today. To learn more about safety issues in ICUs and CUSP in general, visit ahrq.gov/HAI.
It's also important to seek feedback from the people in the unit about maybe why it's not working anymore. Maybe it's just, it's too hard for their workflow. Maybe they don't have time to do it. Maybe there's a simple fix that could improve compliance. I would start there. I would also think about setting some goals setting some kind of goal that is measurable and achievable, and perhaps thinking about incentivizing achieving that goal. You could do anything from sort of a monthly lunch for the staff. If you achieve your CLABSI, your desired CLABSI or CAUTI rate for the month, or in general, I think like food is a good motivator. So a lot of the ideas I have or the things I've seen done revolve around kind of
chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, you want your incentive to be something that's actually going to motivate people. So if you're able to have financial incentives, some places have sort of a yearly unit-based financial incentive goal. So if you can try to incorporate your project into some kind of an incentive plan for people to give them a reason to want to do it beyond just doing what's right for the patient. Another thing that I would mention is that kind of throughout this process, it's really important to work on breaking down any existing hierarchy to encourage conversation to happen kind of on an equal playing field. Try to create an environment where conversation and feedback are not only welcomed, but expected. I think this only works in an environment where teamwork and collaboration are valued. It's okay to have differences of opinion or disagreements between members of the care team, but it's important to engage in a conversation about why those differences exist and try to come to common ground if you can.
Anne, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. This has been a production of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Special thanks to Anne Donovan for joining us today. To learn more about safety issues in ICUs and CUSP in general, visit ahrq.gov/HAI.